Pandorax, a Warhammer 40,000 apocalypse novel by C.Z. Dunn. Read by Gareth Armstrong. Prelude. 347956 M41, Falshear, Tau First Phase Colony. With feline grace and the alertness of a hawk, Zula Degrees prowled through the benighted corridors of the museum. No light save the wan orange glow of one of Falshear's moons seeping through a skylight marked her way, and no sound did she make at her passing. Step by silent step, she followed the route she had memorized on her sole previous visit to the museum, pausing only to check and recheck for motion sensors and noise-detecting alarms she may have missed on her initial reconnaissance. She glided past priceless artifacts and irreplaceable masterpieces without stopping to give any a second look, her resolve focused solely on her mission. In a former life, she would have stripped the place clean and come back for seconds once the dust had settled. But that life was nothing but a memory now, closed off to her ever since the day she had finally been caught and pressed into the service of the Imperium of Mankind. The corridor she was navigating terminated into a vast hall, the light filling the chamber with a lambent glow, not enough to see by, but sufficient to denote the outlines of the exhibits and pieces. Manually adjusting the sensitivity of her night vision goggles, she scanned her new environs for anything that could give away her presence, but found nothing. Fortunately for Zula, her erstwhile hosts practiced a political system that preached fairness and equality in all things, the greater good, as the Tau like to call it, and as a result suffered very little in the way of crime within their society. So far, she had yet to encounter any security measures she would have to evade, and there were certainly no guards assigned to watch over the artworks and antiquities. She was even surprised when she turned up for her after-hours visit and found the doors locked. With a newfound surety that alarm bells were not about to ring, nor was a cage about to descend from the ceiling and ensnare her, she made for the far end of the main exhibition hall, though, ever cautious, she made certain to remain silent. It was good practice like this that ensured she'd spent a profitable decade looting the finest riches all across Segmentum Pacificus, and a good few years beyond that doing the same in the employ of her new master. The works that lined the walls and plinths of the hall were worth the proverbial king's ransom, and purloining a single one of them would set her up for a lifetime, several with all the juvenile treatments she would be able to afford. But even that was too small a price. The people she worked for were more than capable of tracking her wherever she chose to lie low, and the ramifications of crossing them didn't bear thinking about. Her death would be the ultimate consequence, but the route they took her down to reach that destination would be long and grueling. Besides, her new calling was not without benefits. Her master was teaching her all sorts of new skills, and one day, when her apprenticeship was served, she would take his place. One piece in particular caught her eye. She turned about and cautiously took a few steps towards it. It was a suit of power armor, Mark V, judging by the shape of the helmet, in pristine condition, with the exception of a small eye-sized hole in the breastplate where a shot from a fire warrior or gun drone had dispatched its former owner. The combination of poor lighting and the green filter of the night vision goggles meant that Zula could not make out the colour of the livery, but the clenched fist outlined by a circle on the left pauldron suggested which chapter was missing an irreplaceable relic. Under the mask of her body glove, she allowed herself the slightest smirk. No matter how enlightened or progressive a society may claim to be, give them the opportunity to brag about former victories or conquests, and they won't hesitate to take it. You could not move in the Imperium for fear of stumbling over a statue or monument to some hero or other, even entire worlds dedicated to the sole purpose of reminding the populace of dead saints and martyrs, and several alien races Zula had encountered down the years sported trophies taken from fallen enemies on the field of battle. For all their claims of inclusivity and mutual assimilation, they had no qualms about displaying the product of their expansion for all to see. Conscious that her master was tracking her progress through the body glove sensors, she turned her attention back to the task at hand and cautiously completed her passage to the back of the hall. There, nestled between an exquisite elder sculpture older than the Tau race itself and a cylindrical device of unspecified origin that Zula couldn't begin to guess the purpose of, sat the object she had broken into the museum to liberate. A knife. Not a fancy ceremonial dagger, nor a weapon used to wage war, not even a dueling blade or the tool of some worthy figure's demise. Just a plain knife, its tarnished metal blade attached to a worn wooden handle by a tight binding of frayed leather cord. Some imperial scholars might have described it as prehistoric, but in the Imperium that term was a relative one at best. All that Zula could be certain of was that the blade was very, very old. Perhaps that was why the Tau had put it here in the museum, because they thought it a quaint example of a barbaric culture's roots. Had they the slightest understanding of the thing's true heritage and what it was capable of, it would have been under lock and key in their deepest, strongest vault, pored over by their finest minds until they ascertained how to use it, not merely left on a plinth in a museum on a world populated almost entirely by artists. Carefully peeling off the tight-fitting glove on her right hand to reveal the dark skin underneath, experience had taught her that when performing a delicate task such as this, it was better to rely on the true sense of touch, not dulled by the barrier of a second skin. She reached down and delicately grasped the hilt of the knife between her thumb and fingertips. Controlling her breathing, Zula waited until it had slowed to the point where her lungs were barely moving, and on her next inhale gently lifted the knife from the inconspicuous plinth upon which it rested. The wail of alarms that followed was so loud that Zula found it difficult to maintain her balance. She spun on her heel, about to race back the way she'd come, when a wall of solid force sprang up mere centimetres in front of her. Turning back, she found she was enclosed on all four sides and above by coruscating energy, trapping her in a prison no more than 2 metres square. Already having a fair idea of the outcome, she threw the glove she'd removed at one of the walls and watched through her goggles as it disintegrated immediately upon contact. Through the translucent cell, she saw security shutters glide into place, barring all exits from the main exhibit hall, and when she looked skyward, saw the same happening to the glass in the ceiling. For the second time in her life, Zula de Gries, former cat burglar turned agent of the Ordo Malleus, was well and truly trapped.
"What in the name of the throne have you gone and done this time, girl?"
her master's voice crackled in her ear.
"We can hear those alarms from all the way over the other side of the city, and there are fire warrior teams converging on your position."
His displeasure dripped from every word, and the very fact that he'd breached mission protocol to contact her on her Voxspeed spoke volumes about how badly wrong the operation had gone.
"I just need a couple of minutes. The damn knife was on a pressure plate, and it triggered an energy chamber. It looks similar to the ones the Imaltuti use on..."
"You don't have 2 minutes. Those fire warrior teams are on the steps of the museum now."
The pause that followed was heavy with anticipation.
"Use it!"
The anxiety Zula had been fighting hard to control fought its way to the surface.
"You know I can't do that. Even if it does work, how will you..."
"We'll find you. We have to. Now stop arguing and get out of there."
The Voxlink went dead in her ear. If the Tau already knew that it was their human guests who were responsible for the break-in at the museum, then her master and his cohort would have to make it off-world in a hurry, just like she had to. She had never held a knife such as this. Precious few throughout the history of mankind had, but she had been well-schooled in the theory of its application, and gripping it blade down in her fist, held it aloft as if she was making to stab thin air. Her forearm tensed as she waited for it to gain purchase, but the knife sat there, useless in her hands. With the noise of approaching Tau growing ever louder, she lowered the blade. Closing her eyes, she raised it again, relaxing the muscles in her arm and letting the knife do the work instead. Within seconds, she was rewarded, and as the first of the fire warriors reached the shuttered main entrance, the blade twitched as it came into contact with the edges of reality. Zula began to tear through it.
Shazwe Borkan Koplar, like all those of the Tau race, was not one to believe in magic, superstition, or the divine. When he tapped in the 9-digit code to shut off the museum's security system and entered the main exhibit hall, he started to suspect that there was more to this universe than the surety of the greater good. Pulse rifle raised, he ventured over to where he had expected to discover the Gwelar woman trapped within the energy cage, but found only the charred remnants of what could have been a glove or gauntlet and a set of what he assumed to be eyewear. The other members of his team scanned the room for any sign of the intruder. Butts of rifles rested firmly against their shoulders as the marker lights played across the walls and ceilings. Coplar signalled to one of them to deactivate the cage. The other fire warrior removed a small handheld pad from his belt and tapped a series of keys, causing the energy field to dissipate with a sharp hum. Coplar retrieved the eyewear and, after removing his helmet, held them up to his eyes in the vain hope that they may reveal the alien's cloaked form. The goggles functioned similarly to his armor's night vision system, but whereas the Tau technology used complex algorithms to compensate for the lack of light and allowed the viewer to see as if they were in daylight, colors and all, the Gwela equivalent was crude but functional, delineating that shrouded by darkness solely in monochrome green. He moved his head in a circular motion, trying to take in the entirety of the chamber, but the only living souls he saw were the 11 other members of his Larua. He was about to discard the primitive device when something in the vicinity of where the energy cage had been caught his attention. There, suspended half a meter from the museum floor, was a glowing vertical slit of energy. As he watched, it faded away to nothing. When he stepped over to experimentally pass his hand through where he thought it had been, he caught the vaguest scent of something sulfuric on the air, but that too was gone as quickly as the glow. He broke his attention away and realized that every member of his Larua was staring at him, this odd, unhelmeted figure waving his hand through thin air while sniffing like a croothound.
"What are you staring at?" he barked to mask his embarrassment. "The perimeter is secure, so the Gwela thief is still in the building. Split into teams of two, and do not report back in to me until you have found her."
He replaced his helmet, and, pairing up with the fire warrior who had deactivated the energy cage, headed for the west wing of the museum to track down the interloper. The fire warrior team scoured every square meter of the museum twice before Shazwi Borkan Kopla called off a search for the Gwela female. With shame weighing heavy on his heart, he reported back to Aun Kailia that the woman had escaped. The ruler of Falshir was disappointed in Koplar's failure to apprehend the woman, but the loss to the Tau Empire was insignificant. Rather than steal one of the priceless heirlooms of their fledgling race, the thief had only taken a small knife recovered from a third sphere colony, an artifact of no consequence at all, merely a curiosity that the artisans of Falshir had seen fit to display to show how little the Gwela had evolved in all their millennia rampaging across the universe. Kailia's words brought him some solace, but Koplar could not shake the feeling that somehow his inability to capture the woman had run counter to the greater good. That feeling would be augmented shortly after when an administrative error meant that he was overlooked for the trial by fire, and he and his Larua were shipped off to Phyrios to mop up the remnants of the Orc forces the Tau had wrestled the world from. Though he and his fellow fire warriors fought well, the Begel worked their sheer weight of numbers to full advantage, slaying both Tau and Kroot alike at close quarters. Their fate sealed, Koplar's Larua fought a final desperate stand atop a rocky outcrop on the arid world's desert plains, each of his brave fire warriors falling in turn, until he was the last one left standing against a horde of the debased alien beasts. Firing wildly, he felled many of the orcs, but still they pressed on, clambering over the corpses in their frenzied attempt to reach him. His weapon ran dry, and as he was about to start swinging his pulse rifle as an impromptu club, a blow to the side of his head cracked his helmet and smashed him to the hard ground. As Koplar felt the first green-skin blade pierce him close to the heart and looked up to see the brute making ready to deliver the killing blow, his final thought was, "Where did the Gwela woman go?"